The opening of his reign was very Bedouin. The rule of the one God of all the earth, as it was interpreted by Muhammad, began with a series of raids, which for more than a year were invariably unsuccessful, upon the caravans of Mecca. Then came a grave scandal, the breaking of the ancient customary truce of the Arab Amphictyony in the sacred month of Rehab. A party of Muslims, in this season of profound peace, treacherously attacked a small caravan and killed a man. It was their only success, and they did it by the order of the Prophet. Presently came a battle. A force of 700 men had come out from Mecca to convoy home another caravan, and they encountered a large raiding party of 300. There was a fight, the Battle of Barda, and the Meccans got the worst of it. They lost about 50 or 60 killed and as many wounded. Muhammad returned in triumph to Medina and was inspired by Allah and this success to order the assassination of a number of his opponents among the Jews in the town who had treated his prophetic claims with a disagreeable levity. But Mecca resolved to avenge Badr and at the Battle of Uhud, near Medina, inflicted an indecisive defeat upon the Prophet's followers. Muhammad was knocked down and nearly killed, and there was much running away among his followers. The Meccans, however, didn't push their advantage and enter Medina. For some time, all the energies of the Prophet were concentrated upon rallying his followers, who were evidently much dispirited. The Quran records the chastened feelings of those days. The surahs of the Quran, says Sir Mark Sykes, which are attributed to this period, excel nearly all the others in their majesty and sublime confidence. Here, for the judgment of the reader, is an example of these majestic utterances from the recent Orthodox translation by the Maulvi Muhammad Ali. O you who believe, if you obey those who disbelieve, they will turn you back upon your heels, so you will turn back losers. Nay, Allah is your patron, and He is the best of the helpers. We will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve, because they set up with Allah that for which He has sent down no authority, and their abode is the fire, and evil is the abode of the unjust. And certainly Allah made good to you His promise when you slew them by His permission, until when you became weak-hearted and disputed about the affair and disobeyed after He had shown you that which you loved. Of you were some who desired this world, of you were some who desired the hereafter. Then He turned you away from them that He might try you. He has certainly pardoned you, and Allah is gracious to the believers. When you ran off precipitately and didn't wait for anyone, and the apostle was calling you from your rear, so He gave you another sorrow instead of your sorrow, so that you might not grieve at what had escaped you, nor at what befell you, and Allah is aware of what you do. Then, after sorrow, He sent down security upon you, a calm coming upon a party of you. And there was another party whom their own souls had rendered anxious. They entertained about Allah thoughts of ignorance quite unjustly, saying, "We have no hand in this affair." Say, surely the affair is wholly in the hands of Allah. They conceal within their souls what they would not reveal to you. They say, "Had we any hand in the affair, we would not have been slain here." Say, "Had you remained in your houses, those for whom slaughter was ordained would certainly have gone forth to the places where they would be slain, and that Allah might test what was in your breasts, and that He might purge what was in your hearts, and Allah knows what is in the breasts." As for those of you who turned back on the day when the two armies met, Only the devil sought to cause them to make a slip on account of some deeds they had done, and certainly Allah has pardoned them. Surely Allah is forgiving, forbearing. Inconclusive hostilities continued for some years, and at last Mecca made a crowning effort to stamp out for good and all the growing power of Medina. A mixed force of no fewer than 10,000 men was scraped together, an enormous force for the time and country. It was, of course, an entirely undisciplined force of footmen, horsemen, and camel riders, and it was prepared for nothing but the usual desert scrimmage. Bows, spears, and swords were its only weapons. When at last it arrived, amid a vast cloud of dust, in sight of the hovels and houses of Medina, instead of a smaller force of the same kind drawn up for battle, as it had expected, it found a new and entirely disconcerting phenomenon, a trench and a wall. Assisted by a Persian convert, Muhammad had entrenched himself in Medina. This trench struck the Bedouin miscellany as one of the most unsportsmanlike things that had ever been known in the history of the world. They rode about the place. They shouted their opinion of the whole business to the besieged. They discharged a few arrows and at last encamped to argue about this amazing outrage. They could arrive at no decision. Muhammad wouldn't come out. The rains began to fall. The tents of the allies got wet, and the cooking difficult. Views became divergent, and tempers gave way. And at last this great host dwindled again into its constituent parts without ever having given battle. In 627. The bands dispersed north, east, and south, became clouds of dust, and ceased to matter. Near Medina was a castle of Jews, against whom Muhammad was already incensed because of their disrespect for his theology. They had shown a disposition to side with the probable victor in this last struggle, and Muhammad now fell upon them, slew all the men, 900 of them, and enslaved the women and children. Possibly many of their late allies were among the bidders for these slaves. Never again, after this quaint failure, did Mecca make an effective rally against Muhammad, and one by one its leading men came over to his side. We needn't follow the windings of the truce and the treaty that finally extended the rule of the Prophet to Mecca. The gist of the agreement was that the faithful should turn towards Mecca when they prayed instead of turning towards Jerusalem, as they had hitherto done, and that Mecca should be the pilgrimage center of the new faith. So long as the pilgrimage continued, the men of Mecca, it would seem, didn't care very much whether the crowd assembled in the name of one God or many. Muhammad was getting more and more hopeless of any extensive conversion of the Jews and Christians, and he was ceasing to press his idea that all these faiths really worshipped the same one God. Allah was becoming more and more his own special god, tethered now by this treaty to the meteoric stone of the Kaaba, and less the father of all mankind. Already the Prophet had betrayed a disposition to make a deal with Mecca, and at last it was effected. The lordship of Mecca was well worth the concession. Of comings and goings, and a final conflict, we needn't tell. In 629, Muhammad came to the town as its master. The image of Manif, the god after whom he had once named his son, was smashed under his feet as he entered the Kaaba. Thereafter, his power extended. There were battles, treacheries, massacres, but on the whole he prevailed until he was master of all Arabia. And when he was master of all Arabia in 632, at the age of 62, he died. Throughout the concluding 11 years of his life after the Hijra, there's little to distinguish the general conduct of Muhammad from that of any other welder of peoples into a monarchy. The chief difference is his use of a religion of his own creation as his cement. He was diplomatic, treacherous, ruthless, or compromising as the occasion required, and as any other Arab king might have been in his place.